Most of us have labored over preparing a resume when we're looking for a job. We include our education, of course, the things that have trained us for the position we're seeking, our job history, some of the things we've already done, major accomplishments, things that demonstrate that we are able to do the job that we're going to do. So we include those things that we hope will make us attractive to a future employer. When I started out, I was looking for positions as a junior developer. Now I'd be looking for a senior software engineer. Graduated up to an engineer. So I have a question for you. What would you like to have on your resume if you were looking for the position of senior Christian? Senior Christian. What would you put on your resume? What would you like to have there that's perhaps not there now? When Paul wrote to Timothy, he gave him instructions. He left him in Ephesus and said, I need you to oversee the churches and to ordain elders. And then he told them what to look for. So let's go to 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7. 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7. Get my remote out here. Pink. There we go. 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop, then, must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. So today, let's look at the attributes and qualifications for the ideal candidate of elder. First, a little background. I keep saying elder. This word says bishop. Why do I keep saying elder? Well, bishop literally is the word overseer. Overseer, and we would understand that today as an elder. To explain that, I want to go over to Titus. I want to go over to Titus, another of the pastoral epistles. Chapter 1, verse 5 through 7. And this is a parallel passage. Paul is writing to Titus here. He says, for this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. That word elders is presbyteros. Presbyteros. That comes from the word elder, a senior, somebody who's been around a while. Verse 6, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. It's a familiar list, right? Verse 7, for a bishop must be blameless. For a bishop, that word is episkopos. It means overseer. And so an elder and an overseer seem to be used interchangeably. In Acts 20, Paul called for the elders, the presbyteros, and then told them that they were assigned to be overseers, episkopos. Barclay's Daily Study Bible says, if they, the episkopos and the presbyteros, were the same group of men, why were there two names for them? The answer is that presbyteros described these leaders of the church as they personally were. They were the elder men, the older and respected members of the community. Episkopos, on the other hand, described their function, which was to oversee the life and the work of the church. The one word described the man, the other described his task. So that's why I'm using the word elder when we talk about what it says here is translated as bishop. And that means the older people, the seniors, the ones who have been around a while. So we'll look at five broad categories of qualifications. The first we'll look at is Christian maturity. We see that in such words as not a novice, good behavior, or blameless. Blameless, that's a tall order. Other translations use the words above reproach. Above reproach. Now, this obviously can't mean somebody who is perfectly sinless. If it did, nobody would qualify. But again, we're talking about the ideal candidate. Gordon Fee, in his commentary on the pastoral, says, quote, "It has to do with irreproachable, observable conduct." Barclay's Daily Study Bible says, "The Greeks themselves defined the word as meaning, quote, affording nothing of which an adversary can take hold." You think about a wrestling match. Two guys are going at it. One's trying to take the other down. There's nothing to hold on, nothing to grasp onto to take him down. Above reproach. Christian maturity, to me, describes someone who has been on the Christian journey for some time. Hence the words, not a novice. And he's making positive progress that's visible for all to see. Good behavior. That's actually one word. It's the same word as we've seen modest when it talked about women's clothing in chapter 2 and verse 9. And there we said it means orderly or decorous. Other translations of the Bible translate this, that senior Christians must be orderly. The NIV says respectable. Respectable. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he listed a large catalog of sins that he said these things are incompatible with salvation. And he said, such were some of you. We were obvious sinners, as can be seen by our behavior. Even things we didn't know, as we heard, that were sin, we're going ahead and doing those. But as we go through the days of unleavened bread, year after year, and look at removing sin from our lives, do we let them pass by? We do the outward things? Or do we allow them to change us from what we were to what we should be? To be mature Christians. As we mature in this church, this list of attributes should describe us. Yes, this is the qualifications for those who are ordained to the position of elder. But elders should be role models of Christian behavior. They should be the leaders. But we all should be following that lead, growing just like they are. It doesn't make sense for us to say, well, I'm not going to be ordained to an elder, so I can be quarrelsome. I can be greedy. I can be inhospitable because I'm not going to be ordained. No, that doesn't make sense. All of us are growing in the same direction. This list is for elders in the church now, a church that is not perfect, but growing to become so. How much more will these attributes be needed of the saints who rule in God's perfect kingdom? So these are things that we all need to be adding to our resume. So that is Christian maturity. The next heading that I have is leadership experience. I get that from the husband of one wife, able to teach, one who rules his own house well. Before we get into the leadership aspect, I want to talk about this one wife, because that generates a lot of discussion in my research. 4 points here. First, forced celibacy of the ministry is precluded. Some churches teach that the ministry should not be married. That does not comport with what this says here. One is not zero, says the husband of one wife. One is not zero. Second point, well, let me finish this one. We know that some of the apostles were married. Paul wrote to others in Corinthians and talked about the other apostles. who were married, who had wives. Second, polygamy is excluded. If zero is not one, then two or more is not one. Marriage, as created in the Garden of Eden, was one man and one woman. And that's the pattern that's laid out here. Polygamy then would be excluded. A second marriage after the first wife has died is not precluded. We heard in Mr. DeMoor's remarks about if one spouse dies, the other is then free to remarry at that point. I want to go to 1 Timothy 5, because there's a parallel verse here, but it's role reversed. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14. 1 Timothy 5, verse 14. He says, "Therefore I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, etc." He was encouraging the younger widows to remarry. Their husband had died. They were then free at that point to marry again. He said, "I encourage them to do so." Let's go up to verse 9. He says, "Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man." The actual Greek says, "unless she has been a one-man woman." Well, if he's encouraging the younger widows to marry again after a spouse has died, and then here he says that the widows are supposed to be a one-man woman, then obviously that phrase does not mean married only once, and if that spouse dies, that's it. They cannot remarry again. That's the exact same phrase that's used here. The husband of one wife is the phrase a one-woman man. The concept here is faithful to the marriage vows. Faithful to the marriage vows during the marriage, having only one, and no one outside of that. The second wife was common, but Paul says, no, not for our ministry, not for Christians. My last point here is marriage is not required. Marriage is not required. If a man is married, then he is bound by those things. But as we heard, if he's not married, then being a one-woman man doesn't apply to him at that point in his life. Paul, we know, when he wrote 1 Corinthians, was not married. So if he was an elder in the church and he was not married, he wouldn't be requiring marriage of other elders. So back to my point, leadership experience. Elders should demonstrate leadership in their own families. According to flowingdata.com, over 95% of men get married at some point in their lives. And thus, men's most basic and most intimate, most personal leadership role is as husband and as father to the children that may be a part of that marriage. In verse 5, he says that an indicator of how a man will lead in the church is how we see him leading his wife and family. If there's quarrels and fights and disagreement in his own personal family, in an intimate relationship where he's supposed to be the head, how is that going to work out for the church? Paul doesn't think it's going to work out very well. So elders should demonstrate leadership in their own families, and they should also demonstrate leadership in their ability to teach, their ability to pass on the instructions. To me, teaching is where maturity meets leadership. When the writer to the Hebrews wrote, and he wrote about 30 years after the crucifixion, he says, and I'm paraphrasing, "You've been at this long enough, you should be able to teach it by now." Now, I've been writing software for about 30 years, almost 30 years. I should know it. I should be able to sit down and write out a program, then not have to go back to the documentation and say, "What was that again? How did that work out?" I'm learning new things. And as I learn new things, sometimes I have to go back and look at it, but then it becomes part of my repertoire. I should be able to know how to do it and then be able to pass it on to others. When a coworker says, how do I make this thing work? How do I get this particular result? I should be able to instruct to pass on what I know. All senior Christians should be able to pass on the fundamental doctrines to others, whether that's engaged in personal conversation, whether that's teaching, in a Sabbath school perhaps, or in other various meetings. We should be able to do that inside the church and outside the church at the appropriate level. So, leadership experience is needed for senior Christians. Point number three, self-control. Senior Christians must rule their passions. They must not be those who are ruled by them. Some elements that we see, negative things that show people are not self-controlled. These things should not be found on a senior Christian resume. Not given to wine, he says. He controls his appetites. That applies to all sorts of things, even to being a one-woman man. Not violent, not quarrelsome. The old King James, that's translated, no striker. Nobody who's hitting. He should be able to control his emotions, control his fists. They say power corrupts. How often have we seen those given the power of leadership use that power to their own advantage, use that to satisfy their own appetites, embezzling money, demanding sexual favors, perhaps, intimidating subordinates into compliance or into silence? That's the way of the world, isn't it? The world's golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. I've got the power, I can do whatever I want. But that's not Christian leadership. That's not the example that Jesus Christ set. The leaders in the church are human beings, and they're subject to those same desires and subject to those same opportunities. And so, self-control is required. He lists some positive attributes, things that Christian seniors should be known for. He says temperate. That's vigilant or circumspect. He says gentle. He also says sober-minded. The NIV and the others translate it self-controlled. Self-controlled. In fact, in the Strong's definition of that word, they say self-controlled. The Helps Word Study says, safe because it is moderated. It's not going to cause harm because it's held in check. You remember when we talked about followership 101, we said that a key trait of followers is self-management, self-discipline, godly character. And we defined character as learning the right, choosing the right, and doing the right. And that requires self-control. The fourth element we're going to look at is generosity. Generosity. Herbert W. Armstrong taught that there are two broad ways of living. There's the get way, there's the give way. We heard about that in the two trees from him on many occasions. In our natural carnal state, human beings live the get way. We have an inward focus, a desire to satisfy the self. Like science's black hole, everything gets sucked in. Nothing can come out. Everything gets drawn in so much so that not even light can escape, and so it's dark. It's black. God's nature, on the other hand, is the give way, outgoing concern, looking out for the interests of others. Like all those stars that he has twinkling out there. Radiating outward, just burning away. My dad used to say that God does not have an energy crisis. He just got all those stars out there, burning away, producing light for anyone and everyone. Paul says that those who are marked by the getway should not be ordained to the position of elders. He says those who are greedy for money are disqualified because leadership would be a snare for them. Later in chapter 6 and verse 5, he says Timothy and others should avoid those who think that godliness is a means of gain, who are using Christianity or leadership positions in thereof to take money from people, to take opportunities, etc. In that same section, he says that the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And we see that in the world, don't we? So these attributes should not be part of a Christian resume. There are positive things. Elders should be examples of the give way of life in hospitality. We remember Abraham, the father of the faithful. He saw three men a ways off and said, "Come on over. Come sit. My wife Sarah and I will prepare a meal for you." Abraham was rich. He had servants galore. But yet he went and he prepared. Sarah, his wife, went and she prepared food in the kitchen. And they laid it out before these men, who turned out to be messengers from God. He's a living example there of what the writer of Hebrews wrote in Hebrews 13. "Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing some have unwittingly entertained angels." God sends his messengers out occasionally. I want to go to Matthew 25, verse 34. Matthew 25, verse 34. Hospitality and generosity is expected for all of the saints. Matthew 25, verse 34. This heading is "The Son of Man will judge the nations." Verse 34. "Then the king will say to those on his right hand, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world.'" And so Jesus Christ describes his decision-making process for eternal life. 35, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me." Jesus Christ is describing generosity with the physical possessions that he has given to us in the first place. We've been made custodians of things, and how we use those physical possessions shows God something about our hearts and minds. "I was naked and you clothed me," he says. "I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." Time is one of those resources that God has given us. And we need to be generous with our time to serve the members of the body. Well, can we earn salvation by the works that we do? Is that what we're saying? God looks at what we've done and says, well, that's it. No. Remember, we said the give way is God's nature. That doesn't come from human, from ourselves, humanly speaking. That's God's nature. And generosity and hospitality are evidence of God's Holy Spirit working in our lives. And so, when God's Spirit is working in our lives, we do what He would do. God's example, of course, is generosity. In Matthew 5, Jesus said, "He, God, makes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the just and the unjust." Oh, he'll sort out the weeds from the tares in his own good time. But he sends rain to bless all, the just and the unjust, in this life. Jesus' example. What was Jesus' example? He died for us when? While we were still sinners. While we were working against him. While we were antagonistic to his way of life, Jesus Christ went and died. He was generous with his life for our benefit. And so senior Christians should be like God, marked by generosity. Our fifth element, a good reputation. A good reputation. By those who are outside, Paul means those who are outside of the church, those who are not Christians, those who aren't meeting inside with us each week. And Paul was not alone in this. I want to go to 1 Peter 2, verse 11. 1 Peter 2, verse 11. I'm in James. No wonder that didn't work right. Turn too far. 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, self-control, which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Those who are outside the church should look at us and see God's way of life making a difference in our behavior, in the way we live. And of course, Jesus Christ is the role model for a life well lived before the world. You remember the Sanhedrin arrested Jesus, sent soldiers out, brought him back, and they tried him. And they were looking for testimony. They said, tell us what he's done wrong. And they looked for people to come and testify against Jesus. And they couldn't even find false accusations that sounded plausible. Everybody had seen what Jesus done. Pilate questioned Jesus, and he told the crowd, I find no fault with him. He was blameless. He was perfect. He afforded nothing of which the enemy could take hold. And that's the example he set for us. I want to go to Matthew 5, verse 14. Matthew 5, verse 14, because Peter, in writing those words, certainly saw the example of Jesus' life, but he also heard the words of Jesus himself. Matthew 5. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Jesus said that the world is watching us. They're looking, and we should be shining examples. Companies hire brand ambassadors, spokesmen, spokespeople, as we heard, and they promote the products. And if those celebrities are doing well, that works. And if those celebrities get themselves into trouble, get themselves arrested, or do and say things that they shouldn't say, their reputation tanks. And the reputation of the company that for which they promote tanks as well. Why am I saying that? Verse 14, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We are brand ambassadors for Christianity. When we do well and the world sees what Christianity should be, they will glorify God in heaven. On the other hand, if we're not living that way of life, what are they going to see? What are they going to think? The reason for this is people are upset by hypocrisy. People are upset by hypocrisy. And so in verse 7, Satan uses that as a trap. He lays a trap, a snare. He's the accuser. He's the slanderer. And so he's looking for a way to accuse us. And so when we do wrong, we fall into reproach. We fall into blame and disgrace. Reproach means blame and disgrace. And we get caught in Satan's trap. So people look at us and say, huh, Christianity isn't better than any of those other religions out there. And we denigrate the name of Christianity by our behavior. And so the church gives ammunition to Satan if it promotes to the position of elder those who don't practice what they preach. So elders must have a good reputation. My wife suggested that I close with, thank you for coming to my TED talk. Of course, we decided that wouldn't work because this is a Timothy talk. What should we see when we look at the resume of a senior Christian? We should see Christian maturity, someone who's been on the Christian journey for some time and making positive progress for all to see. We should see leadership experience, leading a family well, able to teach and to pass on Christian values. We should see self-control, not someone who is ruled by their passions, but someone who rules those passions and who does no harm because those things are in check. We should see generosity. We should see an example of the give way of life. We should see a good reputation, a person who shines a positive light on Christianity. Elders are called to that standard, but so are all of us, growing and adding to our Christian resume.